Haunted Night, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
All right. We would like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross, and I'm here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to turn it over to Tamara, who's going to tell you about what we're working on now.
Well, we both have solo novels coming out in the next few weeks. My novel is Brimstone. It's a coming-of-age story that takes place in 1968 in a little town called Brimstone, Arizona. The Brimstone Grand Hotel, owned by reclusive former movie star Delilah Devine, looms high on Hospital Hill, harboring long-buried family secrets that whisper of unimaginable horrors, horrors that will echo down through generations. Within the walls of the Brimstone Grand, the cast has come back to life, and Holly Tremaine and her grandmother Delilah are faced with an ancient familial evil that rages just below the old hotel's serene facade, an evil that won't rest until it possesses Holly, body, mind, and soul. And anyway, Alistair's new release is The Silver Dagger, Book 2 in the Vampires of Crimson Cove series, and it picks up where the first book, The Crimson Corset, left off. Life in Crimson Cove has been good to the Coulter brothers since Gretchen Van Treese was staked and her horde of vampires scattered. But when she rises from the grave, the brothers are torn apart, their lives and the peace between them shattered. Meanwhile, a serial killer is stalking the little mountain town, leaving a trail of blood that leads to a truth Sheriff Ethan Hunter doesn't want to face. The streets are no longer safe, nor are the forested paths. For a new and unknowable evil has come to Crimson Cove, and everyone, vampire and human alike, must come together in order to survive. Alistair.
All right. And the first book in that series is The Crimson Corset, and that's available at Amazon.com. And if you're a vampire fan, you might also want to check out its companion novel, Darling Girls, which is a collaboration that Tamara and I did that we included, you know, my vampires from Crimson Cove and her vampires from Candle Bay. All right, again, very quickly, you're listening to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorn.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com. If you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorn. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right, tonight's guest, we're pretty excited. A little backstory. Many moons ago, you, Tamara, my collaborator, was good friends with a great writer named W.D. Gaglione. They used to do snail mail critiques together.
Yeah, critiques.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the 80s,
anyway,
in the late 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. Way back. So years have passed, and we're all good friends with good old Gaglione, great guy. We've had him on a few times. Well, he has a collaborator. So naturally, we wanted to get to know his collaborator. So that's who we're going to be talking to tonight. Outside of his writing, tonight's guest, David Benton, has worn many hats, finding employment as a warehouse worker, landscaper, printing press operator, cheesemaker, bricklayer, and janitor. He is also a musician. His current projects include a collaborative novel with Bram Stoker Award-winning nominated author W.D. Gaglione, and he also plays bass guitar with the heavy metal novelty act Beatallica. His debut solo novel, Fauna, is we recently just read it and love it, and so that's what we're going to talk about. So without further ado, welcome to the show, David. How are you?
Welcome.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me.
And we're glad
you are
to.
Welcome. So yeah, so yeah. We read Fauna, really good stuff. We commented mm-hmm. that we loved hearing. It's got kind of an old school horror feel to it, which we really like. We also really like
yeah.
that it's third person, multiple points of view. So Really good stuff. So I recommend it to anybody listening. And David, why don't you tell us a little bit about the book?
Well, the book is it's more or less, it's my tree hugger fantasy novel. It's for anyone out there who hears stories about lions eating people who are trying to poach lions, you'll probably love this book.
Yeah.
It's more or less all the animals on Earth, including insects, everything basically decides that humanity is a problem and goes quickly, kills enough of the human race to try to rebalance nature.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's in a nutshell. I try not to be too heavy-handed with my own point of view in terms of it. I didn't want, but I think it comes across that even though the animals are the bad guys, they're not really the bad guys.
Right, right. And having read it, I can say it's honestly just a good story. I mean, you know, it doesn't read. Yeah, it's a damn good story. Very entertaining. Very good stuff.
Yeah.
It was very exciting, actually.
It was fun.
We loved it.
It was. Yeah. We ended up on the phone reading it out loud to each other for a while on the weekend.
That's what I was hoping for, was entertaining, fast-paced, entertaining read. And I was really careful. I didn't want it. In the end, I did not want to end it with, aliens taking over the minds of the animals or having it be like a government program to weaponize animals. I definitely wanted to keep it more like a revenge story.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some things in it that I intentionally did not go out of my way to describe. In terms of exactly why this was happening, I kind of chose characters that would not know. So in their point of view, the reader doesn't really get to know exactly why.
Right.
Do you know why?
It's a good mystery.
It's just they got sick of it.
I kind of hinted that there might have been supernatural reasons, but I give like all the characters get a little chance to give their own personal theories about it as the novel progresses, and I thought that was fine. I would just leave it right there.
Right. I liked it that way. I liked the characters were an interesting bunch, too. It was fun jumping back and forth between them. You're a very good character writer.
Yeah, well, thank
you. I like that a lot. Yeah.
I did that mostly to keep the action popping. So whichever character was having the most action at the time, that's whose point of view we stayed with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it had a lot of surprises in it. Yeah, go ahead.
It did. I was just curious. How did it all begin for you when you've worn many hats, as your bio says? So, what brought you to writing?
I think at first it was probably more specifically a love of horror in general, because when I was a kid, and I think just about every market in America had a an independent television station that showed classic horror movies, whatever the kind of shock theater, nightmare theater type program that for me, when I was really young, was more or less my going to church, was going on, listening on a Saturday night to watching old classic Universal or Toho or Hammer films.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I started playing Dungeons and Dragons, which was about the time that I started to actually read some more substantial books, some Tolkien and Watership Down and books like that. And through Dungeons and Dragons, at the time they had a book called Demigods, Deities and Demigods. And it had a section in there that afterwards they took out on the Cthulhu mythos of a Lovecraft deities. And after that, then I started to read Lovecraft because of that. And I think I ended up really fascinated because all the original Lovecraft was published at Arkham House Publishing. Mm-hmm. I mean, not originally, but they were collected and published in as hardcovers by Arkham House Publishing in Sauk City. And at the time I was growing up, my parents had some land out in the country that I would go to, and it was very near Sauk City. And I think somehow through that connection, it kind of perked me up to be interested in writing and publishing because it was kind of close to home.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, how did you meet Bill?
I met Bill. I had just sold my first short story. I think actually after trying for 9 years, I had sold two of them in quick succession, and I don't know if either one of them ever ended up being published. They were both in the small press, and I think the presses went under before they actually saw print. But what had happened is after I had them published, I joined the HWA, the Horror Writers Association, for a short amount of time, and I kind of waited until I got published because I felt like I had to justify my existence.
Yeah.
And I was going to go to they had a chapter down in Chicago, and I was going to just go down there and meet them. And I called the head of the Chicago chapter, who was Lawrence Santaro at the time. I think I'm saying that correctly. Sorry. He's since passed away, so rest in peace. But when I had contacted him, he was like, now I live in Milwaukee, which is about maybe an hour and a half north of Chicago. And they had their meetings on Monday nights late. And he more or less had been like, don't bother driving all, you know, it's kind of, we're not really that active of a chapter. And for you to drive all the way down here, instead, why don't you get involved? There's another guy in Milwaukee who's really involved in the HWA. His name is W.D. Gagliani. Why don't you contact him? So I did contact him, and we started workshopping almost immediately, me and Bill and our other friend, Mark Zerbel.
Nice.
So the three of us started workshopping, and then, I don't know, maybe after about 3 years of workshopping, Bill had gotten an offer to be in an anthology, and they wanted writers who were also musicians. And even though Bill plays some keyboards, he kind of considers himself a dabbler more than an actual musician, but he knew that I was actively playing at the time. So I think to kind of help legitimize the submission for the anthology, he was like, we should collaborate on this and send something in. And it just turned out to be a pretty fantastic short story. So after that, we just kind of continued to work together.
Nice. And you guys,
we were talking
you guys
a little before the show.
Yeah.
There we go again. Yeah, so you
over.
Guys have continued collaborating frequently. How was it writing a solo novel when you're used to collaborating?
It was good. It was fine. You know, I kind of knew, I didn't think that the subject matter of Fauna was something that was going to interest Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I intentionally worked on it solo. It was more or less I started it, and I just didn't think it was something that he was really going to be that interested in working on.
Yeah. Yeah, I can
so
see that.
Yeah, we try to
different
our
yeah.
collaborative work. We try to angle it in the right direction so that it's something that we're both really interested in.
Oh, absolutely! It's got to be that way. That's what
true.
We always go for. Yeah.
No,
we do have a collaborative novel that'll be out in August, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I think you guys are
nice.
Coming back for that. We need to set it up.
Right.
Yeah.
What's that one called?
Yeah.
That's called Killer Lake.
That sounds like fun.
Nice.
Now,
it,
Lake Placid
nice.
Just came into my head when you said that. Is it any...
It,
what's the basic idea?
Killer Lake is kind of like our love song to the splatterpunk genre.
Oh, fun.
So it's a pretty, it can be pretty, it's got some pretty messy moments in it, but we've
mm-hmm.
kind of tried to throw in as many common horror tropes as we could and blend them into one piece of work.
Oh, how fun. I love doing that.
It is. It's got a lot. Yeah, a lot happens in it, and see, it's one of the things I really like about working collaboratively is we can kind of push the envelope, and if anyone I know is bothered by it, I just tell them that Bill wrote that part.
we know that trick.
You know that, babe.
Oh,
we're
okay.
lucky because yeah, and we have it one better because. We're different genders. We can go really far because, well, I wrote that stuff that's so horrifying to women, or he wrote that was so nasty to men. And, you know, we don't never have to tell the truth. The truth is we write everything together.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
That's right. Or,
that's right.
Or depending on who you ask, you get a different answer.
Mm-hmm. That's
yep.
right. Yeah,
yep.
You always have each other to blame.
It's perfect.
It also
helps
with it also helps with keeping a good schedule because you can be like, oh, you know, I got
mm-hmm.
somebody waiting for me. So, you know, which leads into my next question. Do you have I want to talk about your novelty act. That sounds fun too, but very quickly about writing. Do you have a schedule that you keep every day, and is it something that you do on your own, or is it something that you and Bill get together and do? How does your schedule work?
Oh, it's always a little different, and it changes depending on... Now, recently, Bill has had a lot going on in his personal life,
yeah.
and I have as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we fit it in as we can. Actually, the book I was just talking about, Killer Lake, our collaborative novel that comes out in August, that one... We literally, to get it to the finish line, we got adjoining hotel rooms for a week, and we kind of closed ourselves in there and just wrote every day for like five days uninterrupted. That's
nice.
How we finished
nice.
It, because we almost had to do it that way because we both had so much going on that we basically had to run away and disconnect the phone to get it finished.
Yeah. That sounds great.
But ordinarily, I just pick at it, and
mm-hmm.
if I'm writing my own piece, like for Fauna, and I'm working on another longer piece now, I fit that in when I can. When we're collaboratively writing, I feel a lot more pressure to get something done and bounce it back to him. So that tends to go a bit quicker than when I'm doing my own thing.
Yeah. Have you ever tried? Now, we daily, we log on to Skype and into the cloud where we keep our stuff, and we literally write together while we're talking all day, even though we're in different states. And have you ever tried doing that?
We do that, yes. We do that.
But we do it
on Google Docs.
That's I just call it the cloud, yeah.
Oh, yes. Bill and I have done that. And then occasionally we don't Skype, though. We just do it. And then occasionally you bounce your cursor up in front of their cursor and give them a message or just mess with their flow.
We do that orally. but we read out loud daily. Well, he listens and I read because I don't listen well and he doesn't read well, or something like that. He likes to listen. I like to read. So we're always talking. We just finished reading both our solos. Well, I just finished reading both our solos out loud. So now my voice is grainy. But we do that all the time.
That sounds like a perfect partnership to have one that likes to read and one that likes to be read to.
Exactly.
It's true.
Yeah.
It really does work out.
It is.
Yeah, I don't like reading out loud. I don't comprehend it as well when I'm reading it out loud because I'm focused on the words and Tamara doesn't
and I'm
listen
the opposite.
As well if she's So it's like
my brain just goes
hopping
off. Yeah, it'll hear a word and start rhyming different words with it, or, oh, that would make a good story, and two pages later, oh, well, were you still reading? But, yeah.
So, David, what can you tell us about the next solo book that you're working on now?
It's very different from Fauna. It's probably going to be less action-oriented and a little more psychological. It's about it's kind of difficult to explain, but we have a protagonist who's kind of in conflict with a serial killer, but he has some kind of I'm just going to say mental illness that is causing him to believe that he knows this serial killer in a past life, which he bases on the fact that he's reading a fantasy novel that somehow he misconstrues as past life events that involve him and this serial killer.
Cool.
That's like a really rough overview because there's a lot that goes on in there, but hopefully if it works right for the reader, it should be a little bit difficult for them to tell if our protagonist is actually right and this is actually what happened or if it's just all in his head.
Nice.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
On top of writing, you also play bass with a heavy metal novelty act called Beatallica. What can you tell us about that? How did that happen?
I'm not their original bass player. I didn't know. I was friends with their previous bass player. And, at that level... Playing at that level, which Beatallica is like a touring band. They ended up getting some notoriety because they were sued by Sony Music for using the Beatles catalog without permission. And Metallica actually let Beatallica use their lawyers to defend them in court, so they ended up getting some pretty good press because of that. So
nice.
Beatallica is a touring band, so I've been to Europe with them 3 times now, and we've done the East Coast and the West Coast. But it still is not a big enough moneymaker for everybody to retire from their day job, or just like writing, any kind of creative endeavor incredibly difficult to actually make a living doing it. So the previous bass player had, he was going to have his first child, and so he was no longer going to be going on tour. So he asked if I could fill in, and I did fill in for a while until it became, I became more of the regular guy than the fill-in guy. And from there, I just kind of took over. We don't play that often. We played, we were on tour early in 2017 with a band called Oakley Dokley, which plays, they actually all dress up as Ned Flanders and play,
oh dear,
play Simpsons themed heavy metal music. We were on the road
That's
with
awesome.
Them in 2017 for about,
huh?
for about, ooh, a little over 2 months, I think. It was like 42 dates, I think. And and then I play with another local band in Milwaukee called Chief, a three-piece rock band. But, you know, the older I get, the more the music ends up a little off to the sideline. I'm starting to get to that point. You know, for so many years I felt like one of those old guys on the Tonight Show spinning plates on seeing how many plates I could keep spinning. But I find that the older they get, I get, the more tired of spinning plates I get.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, we hope you keep at it for a while. I'd love to see you guys play. I think that sounds awesome. We are out of time, but you are coming back with Bill in a few months to talk about Killer Lake, and we're very excited about that.
I was just checking my calendar. As it turns out, on that night, I'll probably be calling from the Iron Maiden concert in Chicago.
Nice.
Nice. Find a quiet place.
Right. I'll stay out in the parking lot until the interview's over.
Oh, perfect.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. So before That's we good. Let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can find more about you and your work?
I would say just check Amazon. Look for Fauna David Benton on Amazon. You can buy the book, and then you can go to my author page and see anything else there that's available that you might be interested in.
Cool.
All right.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure meeting you, David, and we're looking forward
to
your next
show. Thank you guys
so
much for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for being on. All right, and thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights
and sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
100 Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.